Welcome to the first episode of The Innovator by the Kenyan Wall Street Podcast. My name is Ali Mwakaneno Gakweli. I'm your usual host. And today I'm sitting with a Nairobi-based company called Afex. So Afex is a tech company. And what they do is they build solutions for both local and international problems using tech. And one of the solutions that they really have in the market is called Apollo, which is an intelligent barrier access system. And today with me, I have Fidel Makatia, the CEO, and Cynthia Thuo. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so Afex, what's the story? How did you guys start this company?
The story of Afex is very interesting. That's why I can start with that. So basically, last year in March 2020, when COVID came to the country, we decided to create the first ventilator, because by that time, Kenya only had 500 ventilators and a population of 50 million Kenyans. So we saw a crisis ourselves. And since myself, I was an engineering student by that time. And we said, okay, what can we do to alleviate the situation? Because we had 500 ventilators, 50 million Kenyans. So I decided, why don't I form a team that we can address this problem by creating more ventilators? For sure, we couldn't have created a cure or a vaccine because we are not medical students.
Definitely.
Yeah, so we decided we do what we do best, that's make machines. So during that process of making machines, the ventilator took us like, I think, 4 to 5 months. Then during that process, we discovered that we have climbed one hill. And I think it was Nelson Mandela who said, after you climb one hill, you realize there are many more hills to climb. So we said, okay, COVID is just one problem in Africa and the world. There are other problems which you can solve. And the best way to do it is, why don't we get incorporated as a company? So we five of us came together. We said, okay, we have skills. We have the brains. We have the knowledge we have learned in school. Then why don't we apply these things we know on this side of the world? Then I remember we met in a lab, an electrical lab somewhere, and they said, okay, Afex is the name. Let's form the company. Let's do this.
Why Afex? What does Afex mean? I'm sorry, this is something that I've asked you guys a couple of times and I still don't have the answer I want.
So basically, Afex, like I said, five of us came together to form the company. So Afex is actually the initials of our names. Like A stands for Alan, mm-hmm. F stands for Fidel, E stands for Eric, C stands for Cynthia, and S for Steve. So these are the five guys who came together to form the company. So Afex.
Okay, right. I get it. Okay, guys, so your first product, or rather the first innovation by the Afex team, or rather the team that came to form Afex, was the ventilator. Tell me about the journey. How did that go? How did you guys, what was your experience building a solution? And I have to say this, it was under duress, because you're building a solution for a problem that's affecting the whole world, and it's literally closed down economies.
So I remember myself, I was the one going home. I would say this then, I think Cynthia will weigh in, because maybe her perspective is different, because you know, we have ladies in engineering nowadays. So I remember I was going home myself, and I'm the first graduate from my family, and the first engineering graduate for that matter. And so when we went home, they declared a lockdown for the country by the president.
Right.
So I said, there's no way I'm being locked down here with my parents, and they are the ones who sent me to school to provide solution. That's when I went online, researched. I had never seen a ventilator by that time. I'm an electrical engineering, an engineering graduate, electrical, not biomedical or medicine. Mm-hmm. So I never saw a ventilator. But when I went online and Google, I realized that there's something called a ventilator which can be used to treat COVID. So when we came to school, I assembled a team. The team, actually 90% of the guys had never seen a ventilator. So it means one blunder we made as engineers, we usually overpromise, because based on the math, that's what we say. But vertical ground is different, because the math is true, but in ground, things might be different. So we told the university that we are able to make this ventilator because we did all the theory online. So it will give us a chance to come back. We'll do it in 1 week. That 1 week was one of the... I went for 3 days without sleeping.
Wait, you guys built a ventilator in 1 week?
Because we told the university 1 week, and they asked us, really, are you sure? I said, yes. Based on what? Based on the math, based on the theory we have. Then we came here, the university said, okay, you have 1 week. And they gave us all the funding, all everything. But now the problem is, we are not factored now that vertical ground is different. like systems might fail too. I remember the first model we made for the blender, we just put air on it, the thing exploded. We were like, man, but simulation was right, everything was okay. Computer simulation says it's supposed to be working, but everything has exploded. So how do we do? So we used to sleep actually in this center, in a room somewhere. We didn't even go to the hostel to sleep that time because we had to make sure. The VC used to come every day to make sure by 1 week we have the ventilator. Because he had actually even invited the ministers, cabinet ministers, and the government was really keen. So it was one of the steepest learning curve I've ever faced in my life. And the good thing is that the human mind is elastic. So we learned a lot and we grew a lot that time. And I remember after we did the first launch, the initial prototype, which the entire country saw that time, it was actually 60% working, 40% was not working at all. But it was something, we had shown something and everyone was excited. Then it took us like 2 months to come up with now the one which is now in clinical trials. 2 months we're working with different parties, trying to make the prototype conform to the market. We learned a lot about product design, about customer, about user, about product, because the dream of an engineer is to have a product which can be used by people outside. Okay. Not just saying you're an engineer by theory, because then what is the difference? So it really gave us hope. Then later, during that time, we got very good awards. For example, the UN Person of the Year by the United Nations. Then the head of state gave us the head of state commendation. So it really boosted ourselves. I said, okay, so even in this part of the world, it's not just BBI and politics and 2022, it's also there. People can also appreciate innovation. So for me, the whole journey has been a learning process and a growing process, per se. And I've grown both physically and also in my soul.
Cynthia, how about you? How was the journey of building the first prototype in 1 week?
Well, it was interesting but exhausting. That was 1 week of my life that I hadn't anticipated going through. It was an exhausting but again interesting week. And as Fidel said, we had moments of not sleeping for more than 2 nights and it was a very, it was a very good process for us because it showed us that amidst devastation, because when COVID struck at first, people thought there was going to be an apocalypse, but people were devastated everywhere at home. People thought, man, we are doomed. So the fact that they could see some light, yeah, it was a driving force during that 1 week of exhaustion. So, yeah, that was it for that period of 1 week.
Before we even get to affects, I really have to go into this. So, you saw a ventilator online, and then you decided, you know what, we can build this. You assembled a team. Then you go to the school, say we can give this to you in 1 week. Like, is this 1 week like 5 business days, or is this 1 week seven human days? Because all of them look impossible. What happened after that 1 week? Did you guys really deliver?
So, the first day of that 1 week, let's start from there. The first day of that 1 week, we were so excited. I remember we had bought some components and guys were cooling. They was already opening the components when we were standing. They wanted to start, dive right in. But in the third day, we realized we actually don't know what a ventilator, how it works. So what we did, I remember sitting down, we sat everyone down. And what we did, we told some medical students, please explain to us how a human being breathes, because we have never seen this machine. And what we thought we know is not working, because we have built something which is operating like a pump. So we told them explain. So they sat us down, explained to us the principle of ventilation in a human lung. Then there's a doctor called Dr. Gueno, sent us a big book called Anatomy of Ventilation for Medicine. So we went through it and we started reverse engineering how a human being breathes and putting it into a machine. So this is how a human being breathes. We mimic that in program and electronics, put it in a machine. Then in day five, the VC had already called the Minister for Industrialization. So the minister was already had confirmed that he's coming, and the PS of Education. So that night was hectic for us because there's university reputation, there's our degrees are actually hanging on the thread, there's our parents, they say all those things, this COVID, so there's a lot of things. But the first, when we went to public the first time, and the machine was operational, it was 60% operational. What we did, I told my team, let's make sure the core things are working. Not everything, but let the core things. For example, let it be able to deliver the set pressure and the set physiological parameters, and let it be able to sense all these things supposed to. For the accuracy, let's not mind for accuracy for now. Let's just make sure we deliver fast as a prototype. We prove that concept it's working. So I said 60% complete. So we actually delivered 60% ventilator complete at that time. Then for the next 2 months now, we now worked on how do we now make this thing as accurate as 1% error margin.
So fine-tuning.
Yeah, fine-tuning now. So we fine-tuned it and we made sure that it's now market-ready. So what we did now, we said, okay, we are going to the market. We have people like Hamilton. We have people like GE. We have American companies. We have Turkish companies. And by the way, the fastest they have ever made a ventilator in Turkey is 6 months. As we made it in 2 months. So it's something, and we have a patent for the same. And if I'm allowed to say much, is that the first time we went public about our MVP, we got some people from Germany, companies from Germany interested in buying a ventilator. Because they couldn't imagine how we have taken a machine, the same standards, the same ISO standards, but we have made it half their costs, and we have also innovation on it, and we took 2 months to build it. So they couldn't imagine that is the mighty Germany now. So they had to come and buy some equipment from us. Imagine. So that one really encourages us. But now we spent 2 months fine-tuning, and I really thank people like KEBS, Kenya Bureau of Standards, because I remember they used to come here early in the morning, leave late in the evening, helping us understand the standards, working in partnership with us, developing standards, telling us this is how it's supposed to be. I remember some guys from Medtronics came later with their ventilator, say, okay, it's our ventilator, how it works. We compared ours and theirs, and ours was better, and we were like, yay! Better ventilator. So it was a hectic season, but at least, like I said, it really impacted our careers as young engineers.
Cynthia, Fidel says you're the face of the company. How or whether you agree with that is a you problem? What was the reception of your innovation, the fast ventilator? And I'm not talking about the final product here, what's in clinical testing. I'm talking about the MVP. What was the reception at school level? Because we definitely have to start there, because at that time, you guys were students. What was the reception at our personal level? What was the reception at our national regulatory level?
When we made our MVP for the ventilator, the reception was warm, I would say, because, well, we got all the recognition needed, and we also got funding initially. So I would say it was warm from the school too, because when you were making it, we got a lot of support from accommodation to food. Yeah, so there and many others that I won't mention here. But the reception was quite warm, and we were encouraged to continue in the fine-tuning process. Yeah.
Actually, I remember that support from the school was so much in that because one day we came, it was on a Sunday, we had forgotten to buy something called a glue gun, a small thing. Mm-hmm. The university ordered the driver to drive us all the way in town. So we were driving down from shop to shop looking for a glue gun.
What?
So they used to give us personal drivers. We can't just go out.
Yeah.
We go out, we drive us out. Dean actually drove us all the way to Kiambu to look for some components we were looking for there. So the school was really supporting us. Anytime we call, even at 3 a.m., our lecturers used to wake up and say, what is it, Fidel? Which one is not working? I say, sir, I'm writing this program and your theory is not working here. And the lecturer is waking up out of his bed, coming to help. So everyone was actually sacrificing everything, including the university itself.
Yeah. Even the mentorship we got from there was quite a lot. And it came a long way in helping us.
Yeah.
In our MVP and during the whole innovation process.
Let's talk about the challenges. What was the biggest challenge, both from a personal point of view and from our team stroke innovation point of view that you experienced while building the TIPA ventilator, and how did you navigate that? Cynthia, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you. For the greatest challenge I would say we encountered from my perspective would be the fact that when we came in, of course, we were all excited and all that, but we had different, our composition had different people with different personalities. So, of course, the initial challenge was settling differences so that we can bring the best out of each and every person, mm-hmm. which eventually we overcame that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's I would say from my point of view, that was what we faced as a team. Yeah.
For me, I have three challenges. I was a team leader, so that is the most challenging job you can have in a team, because you mind about every person's bad behavior and good, because it's your business. Your people's business is actually your business as a team leader. And what Cynthia said is true. You know, it's very hard to lead a team of bright people because everyone thinks it's right. Because everyone, mind you, we have 15, two are electrical engineers, four are biomedical engineers, two are mechanical engineers, and we have medical student, pharmacy student, nursing student. So imagine a biomedical engineer thinks a ventilator is a biomedical engineering problem. So he says, electrical engineer, you have nothing to say here. A medical student is saying, no, these are medical machines, so I should be the one calling the shots. So you have to come say, hey guys, the goal is a ventilator. It's not what you guys think it should be done. It's, let's make sure. So I remember when we were doing brainstorming session, there were more than 50 hypotheses reported, and each one is able to prove and stand firm on their hypothesis. You as a team leader, you have to make sure you make the right judgment. Because if you don't make a wrong judgment, they'll tell you, I told you so. As the medical student, I told you it's not working this way, and you will not listen. And that's how they'll be passive in the team. So, like I said, bringing the team together and managing it for more than 6 months was a real issue. And I thank God. I didn't know I have it in me. So I really thank God for the award I got from the president. At least it came. At least it showed that you can manage. Then number two is the learning curve. Like I said, most of us have never seen a ventilator. So we had to learn a lot about ventilation. We read books on medicine. We read things about biomedical engineering, biocompatibility, ISO standards, all those things we do. We didn't know, and we are not even anywhere close to our line of duty as electrical engineering students and right now graduates. But now we had to go deep in and make sure we not just read, but understand, because you have to apply. So you don't just read to pass exam. We need to understand and apply. So it was really hectic. I remember there's one, the mentors, they are very learned, they were professors and doctors. So they used to come and just mention jargons to us. Say, no, you have to put this, you have to put the other, you have to put this. Dr. Mambo comes, no, this signal has to look like this. You're like, what? What is that? That's a PhD concept. You have to make sure you figure out. So the learning curve was steep. Then lastly, I think, was we were building a very sensitive medical device. I think it's a class 3 medical device. It's very sensitive because it goes inside the body of a human being.
I'm sorry, break down the classes of medical devices here, because I'm really not well versed with that.
Okay, so there is a medical device which does not go inside, it's outside the body, like a medical app, mm-hmm. like an app to track your, let's say, medication or your fitness. That one is not critical, because if the app fails, you don't die, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's another one which it's good, it goes inside the body, but it's not very critical, like a syringe, let's say, or let's say, it's not a critical, it might have, let's say, 20% margin of error. But there are things which, for example, a ventilator, which they imagine it goes inside your trachea, goes into your lungs, it penetrates, it's called, they put it inside. So you see, it needs to be 1% margin of error, because it's very sensitive. It's very critical, a very critical machine. That's why you find a ventilator is actually usually in ICUs and HDUs. It's not in normal wards per se. So we are building such kind of machine, and it means error was not an option. And also, apart from error, it has a lot of processes like clearances. You have to go through here, you have to go through CABS, you have to go to Pharmacy and Poisons Board, you have to go through the Ethic Review Committee, they have to see the ethics of your trials, what materials you have used. So it really, there are a lot of red tapes. So we really, because when you're coming together, we're saying, okay, week one, build a ventilator. Week two, make it public. Week three, become billionaires, because we saw, when we sell these ventilators, each person takes, let's say it's 2 million per ventilator, and we sell 500 of them, you see, we're all billionaires. So that was our plan. By week 3, we are buying. Week 4, we are in Hawaii in a yacht. Week 5, we are We are rolling with Rolls Royce, but it is not possible.
I have to ask, did you guys get anywhere close to this? Because maybe we need to switch jobs.
So like I said, it's a long process. We stayed in Clinical. Imagine we got a Pharmacy and Poisons Board approval on, was it June? So we got the PPB approval in June, Pharmacy and Poisons Board approval in June. And the ventilator was ready last year, June. So it took us 1 year to get that approval. Then we just got, Nakosti approval last week. I just saw it last week. So you see, it has a lot of processes. So making a medical machine, actually, most people take 7 years.
Yeah.
Before you sell, it's 7 years with the entire process of approval. So the reason why ours has been shorted is because of the pandemic. So they are really making sure they're fastening everything. But it takes up to 7 years to get that approval.
I like how you've stepped into the approval processes here, because one of the questions I had for you guys is, how did you work with and sometimes navigate regulations? Who are some of the regulators that you worked with to make sure that, you know, we move this ventilator from an idea to something that can actually work inside a human body within the shortest time possible?
So I think basically, I think the attitude of winners is when you discover that you are not a monopoly. As in, you cannot do it all by yourself. And there are guys already there who you can leverage on. We call it standing on the shoulders of giants. So basically, Cynthia talked about, I said, mentorship. So part of the reasons why we went to KU with our patent, with our idea so we can get patent and work with them, is because KU has very many schools with professors. Kenyatta University has good relationship with KEBS. So, and other parties. So with that KEBS relationship, when we were going for approval, for KEBS approval, it worked quickly because KU as a big organization, it can really lobby for these things more than a small person, one person who's just a student. They'll take you through a lot of processes and all those things. So that was the first thing. Then we had also the part of the committee, we had 13 mentors, each from different disciplines. We had one for computer science, one from biomedical, one from electrical, one from pharmacy, one from medicine, one was an anesthetist, the guys who actually ventilate you in the ward, in the theater room.
Mm-hmm.
So those guys, like for the pharmacist, they had worked with Pharmacy and Poison Board initially, so they knew the right processes to follow. For the IP, we had Dr. Kosibe, who's the head of HNR Business Center, who has been well versed with IP and protection. So before even we started, he was already working on how we're going to get protection and all those things. So I think the best way as an innovator and a young company is to partner with people already there. Don't assume that they are there, they are not doing anything or they're weak. Just partner with them so that you can ride on their relationships and ride on their strengths. Because that's what we did and we really benefited. That's why you see our approval has taken 2 years at max. We take 2 years at max, but usually it takes 7 years to get approval.
Cynthia, let's talk about the IP here. And earlier, I remember we had a side conversation with you guys before the podcast, and what you intimated with me is that Kenyatta University owns the intellectual property rights rather than the patent to the ventilator at the moment. Is that correct?
Well, actually, when we came and designed the ventilator and everything, we got the IP.
Mm-hmm.
And after we got the IP, came, did the prototype and everything, the IP was still ours. What we did is we commercialized it to KU.
Right.
Yes.
What does commercialization of IP mean?
Okay. So what it means is that as we're speaking, Kenyatta University right now, as the product is going out, it is KU's property. But the brain behind it is the students that made it. So then they are in charge of commercializing the product itself. They are the ones who are selling it out. If you want to ask any question concerning trading and all that, that is KU's problem.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. But the brains behind making the ventilator are the students.
Oh, okay, I get that.
It's just like you have a good idea for a good shot.
Mm-hmm.
Then you say, you come and meet me. Let's say I'm a big company. I have the muscle. So tell me, this is my idea. It's my shot. I've already done the prototype proof of concept. But you see, I don't have the muscle to go against FUBU or Adidas or Gucci or Versace, because they are big companies. They can do marketing and all those things.
So sort of riding on KU's strength to roll out the ventilator.
Exactly. Now telling them, no, this is the IP. It's mine, yes. But this is how we're going to share. So you, because you will help in marketing and selling, and the IP is mine because it's my product, we'll be splitting this profit at this percentage, and this is the laws governing the commercialization. So that's the meaning of commercialization. You have the product, but you don't have the strength to take it out.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, oh yeah, take out from me.
I'm happy that I'm sitting with literally the operations team here. The chief operations officer, Cynthia, and the CEO is overhead. So let's talk about scale. Again, before we bring back to Apex. How did you guys scale your production outright from the MVP to now clinical testing? How many ventilators are we testing out there? How many do we have?
So let me first make it clear.
Sure.
Apex came about after the ventilator. So it's the same team, but the ventilator is not owned by Apex, owned by the university itself.
Yes.
So I think that question we can talk about when we're talking about Apollo now, because
mm-hmm.
how we have scaled up Apollo.
Right.
But for the ventilator, so our main role was just design it,
mm-hmm.
come the prototype, but the entire production line, KU has actually even employed people for it, because they're handling all those things.
So sort of they magnified your idea and yeah. what you, like your initial milestones to,
yes.
to allow for more production.
It's like we have contracted KU to produce the ventilator.
Okay.
But as for the last time we talked, their plan is to do 50 ventilators per week. And the trials is still part of the R&D process of mm-hmm. certain design. That's why we're still involved.
Mm-hmm.
The trials, we got the approval last week by Nakosti. We paid and all those things.
Nakosti?
Nakosti is, I've forgotten the full name, but usually this is research.
Mm-hmm.
So research both equipment and also medical. So they give you approval for trying your product, like
right.
trials, clinical trials and all those things. Like trying it out, let's say you invent a robot, give you approval to try it with some place or things like that. Because yeah, you're still in Kenya. You have to be governed with laws. You can't just do what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
So they have to give you approval so that they know you're doing it. So that in case something happens, they already know you're doing it. And that's where they come in. But now, so we do the trials. And after the trials, the ventilator is ready to be set to go out. Let me also stress this, that most ventilators don't follow the trials part, because it's not compulsory. But the reason why KU is following the trial part is because of reputation.
Yeah, I mean, you're telling me there's something that goes into my lungs that doesn't need to be tested.
You see, as long as you're compared the ISO standards and it's working, because KEMS came with the machines.
Mm-hmm.
So they already, like, they know it's working. The trial is just to make sure that we collect data. We see how it's working on the ground. So if you see most ventilators we buy from China, and I don't know if I should say China here. Maybe they will.
Okay.
Most ventilators you buy from abroad, let me say it like that, they are not tested. The reason why I'm saying this is because when we're doing our MVP, we managed to bought a very new ventilator. It has not been used. And when we started trying it and comparing the standards we have from ISO, it was not even meeting those standards at all. And the funny story is that it's actually ventilating patients as we speak. And everyone is comfortable. So the reason why KU said we have to go to trials is because we are a university, we are an academic institution doing research. So it's also helping us to do more research so we can inform other designs, and also we want to get it right so that we don't, 5 years, 10 years from now, guys don't say people are dying because of this thing. So it's not just business, but most ventilators in the country have not even gone through the trials. So most people skip that part because they want to make money.
Right. This is not our first conversation. We have a lot to unpack with regards to Apex, Apollo, and some of the projects that you guys are working on. So after you've successfully developed Kenya's and one of Africa's first ventilators, how did you then decide to, you know what, we're going to be doing this full-time, we're going to sit down and form a company and this is going to be a thing? Cynthia, you look like you have something interesting to say.
Well, I would say the ventilator was kind of a starting point, and it was a moment of epiphany because, like I said, at that moment of crisis, we realized we had the solution within. And upon checking, well, we saw there are other problems that come alongside COVID-19. And some of them actually revolved around the pandemic and around others. And it was upon seeing those problems and upon that moment of epiphany that we were like, we can come up with other solutions that can actually better the state of the society currently. And that is how AFEX was born.
Sorry, you mentioned problems, and we're in Kenya, we have too many. What are some of these challenges that you decided to actually need pick and focus on?
Well, since we had initially started out using TibaVent, that is the ventilator, one of the problems we saw initially was, again, COVID-19, in that people are not adhering to the current standards and regulations that had been set by the Ministry of Health, so as to regulate the spread of the disease, of the virus. And therefore, we came up with a solution that can reduce the spread of COVID-19. That is, it ensures that a person has a mask and the person's temperature is correct before entering a premise. So that was one of the parameters that was being checked before a person got in, so as to regulate the spread of COVID-19. Aside from that, since business-wise, you have to think, so what if COVID ends? How will you be making money? So we saw that security also is an issue, and we coupled the COVID-19 solution with security aspect by ensuring that any person who comes in not only has a mask and the temperature is correct, but is also registered with the system so as to be granted access. That's Apollo.
I think what he said is very important So just imagine, when there's something called adrenaline rush you get. For example, let's say I'm playing with you, FIFA, let's say PS, then I beat you. I kind of want to beat other people, right?
That's it.
Okay.
No, just run. It's okay.
You kind of want to say, okay, I'm the champ. So who else wants to get my beating? So you want, okay, come, let's play, let me beat you. So you want to do all this to beat everyone. Then later you realize, okay, FIFA is not necessary, let's do another game. So basically, when you solve a problem, you really want to be solving other problems. Like I said, Nelson Mandela, once you climb a hill, you realize there are many more hills to climb. So in AFEX, we don't believe in staying in past glory, this is what we did. We said, okay, if this is what we did and it does change this at this level, why don't we amplify it and change these other levels? So that's when we said, okay, let's identify, like she said, how Apollo came to be when you talk about in the process. We realized a very interesting story, because it was just something in the office we were doing and checking and like, we can make this as a product. And that's how Apollo came to be. And after we did that, one day we were watching Elon launching a Falcon in space. And we said, okay, is it only Elon who can do this? Can it be done here in the country? And research, we realized actually Kenya is the best place to launch these things because it's closer to the equator. It's close. You use less fuel when you want to go up.
Mm-hmm.
Then you say this is where this should be the hub of innovation. That's what inspired things like electric charging station, electric cars, and nano satellites. The things we are doing currently is because we see there are many challenges we can use, and most things in Kenya have not been harnessed, like space. Kenya really does not use its space. We use other people's space. We want Google Cloud, Azure. We don't use our own space. So there are a lot of things we can do with technology in this country. So we said, okay, let's be tackling them one after the other. And maybe corruption might not be part of the things we want to solve because it might not be technology problem. But
so I, you know what? I believe that technology will not necessarily solve corruption, but then possibly bring us to a step closer away from it.
Yeah.
This is all I had for today. To my listeners, there's definitely more to unpack, as you've noticed. This is our first episode. We're going to have another episode where we get to unpack really what Apollo is and some of the ways which AFEX has been able to navigate and bring these innovations to the ground. Thank you for joining us in today's discussion, Fidel and Cynthia. I look forward to having the next one.
Thank you.
All right, goodbye.